Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better, and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
And welcome to
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist.
Well, goodness, I am having some technical difficulties. I've got some sort of a virus, and I just discovered that as I tuned into the show. So please, I apologize, and I will get that fixed promptly. It's nice to know you've got those kind of things, but I would have liked a little bit of warning. Hey, I am Carol the Coach, and I'm here to help you with sexual addiction, and I cannot stress enough how important it is to be able to self-assess, get yourself to the right people, and work on the issues that keep you from sexual intimacy. You know I have listeners all over the world, and if you have a question, you can feel free to call me at 646-595-3284. I am here to help you assess what you may need to do, whether you have the addiction yourself or love somebody who does. You know, I've often said that the shame is what follows my clients who have sexual addiction, but their partners deal with the betrayal, which is a whole different type of trauma. And I get calls and emails from all over the world talking about what it takes to work through their sexual addiction. You know, this is not something that gets cured. This is something that's managed. But here's my promise to you, that if you work on getting healthy and recovering and following the steps, you will be healthier than 99% of your friends and your loved ones, because you will constantly be in the mode of self-improvement. And actually, that self-improvement kind of substitutes for what the sexual addiction used to bring to you. So the good news is that you will start craving what it takes to stay healthy. And that, in and of itself, is a wonderful gift. And that's what we look at when we look at sexual addiction. We look at what are the gifts that it brings and what can you do to actually promote improved mental health. Now, I had an email from a man, oh gosh, right before Christmas, and I didn't get to get to this because, you know, Christmas was a busy time. I've had a lot of fabulous guests. I've got a secret. I'm going to be interviewing Claudia Black in the next month. Anybody who knows anything about addiction knows that Claudia has written more books about what it's like to love somebody who has addiction, or for kids, what it's like to have a parent who has an addiction. So I'm real excited about talking with her. But I have these fabulous guests almost every week. Tonight, you have me. And I got this email, and it said, "Hi, Carol. I listen to your podcast weekly." Now, you may wonder, how does he listen to a podcast weekly? Well, he goes to iTunes, and he downloads for free the entire series. And when he does that, it automatically downloads. So if you like this show and you want to hear more, if you press the subscribe for free button when you go to iTunes and you put in sexual addiction or sex help with Carol the Coach, it will download all the shows I've done and all the future shows. You can also go to blogtalkradio.com/sexhelpwithcarolthecoach. And there you will be able to download each episode that looks interesting. So this is a listener who listens weekly. And he says, "Sometimes I listen to several of them several times. I wanted to express a term you use on your podcast that is somewhat triggering to me. I'm a recovering sex addict, and other listeners like me might find the word triggering as well." He says, "When you use the term hookup in a general way, it reminds me of websites. What their aim is to do is just that, hook people up for sex. I understand the context you are using, and I understand that I'm responsible for how I respond to such words. I think why it bothers me is that I feel some remorse or regret over my past acting out behaviors, and that includes visiting sites like the sites that talk about hookups. I'm asking, would you consider that such words might be confusing to us in recovery? Even in the context that you use it, it seems a bit degrading and like a negative word that describes relationships between the sexes. Would you consider not using that word? I'm open to your response." And so, of course, I responded to him, and I said, "Hey, I totally understand that that is a word that is triggering to you, and certainly I don't mean it to be. When I talk about hookups, I am talking about clients that get together for recreational sex. And I will look at considering other words that I can use to avoid triggering this listener. However, I'm so glad that he takes responsibility for the fact that it is triggering for him. You've heard me say it before, you know, in my men's group. If I'm wearing heels, they say that's triggering. If I'm wearing over-the-knee-high boots, they say that's triggering. If I wear nail polish and sandals, they say that's triggering. And although I totally get that there's a variety of things that male or female counselors can do that are triggering, the important thing is to talk about it, to bring it up to your therapist so that you can have an open and honest dialogue, because it's in your secret. When you keep these things in your mind, that kind of secrecy perpetuates sexual addiction. And so for this listener to say, "Hey, I find this triggering," he's already on the road to not being triggered so much, if I were to use that word. And although I will make a concerted effort not to use that word, I want my listeners to be as comfortable as possible, I also appreciate that he takes responsibility and he knows, really, it isn't up to me. If I'm not doing anything blatantly sexual, then probably he's going to have to figure out a way to reframe my word. Okay, so let's look at that word for a second, hookup. I would like for him, as I assume he is listening, to think, okay, what is that definition for her? And as I indicated, it's when people get together to have recreational sex. Now, that in and of itself can be very triggering. But, you know, before this person was a sex addict, he may have had strong feelings about recreational sex. He may have, I don't want to say he may have been pro-recreational sex, but he may not have had, it may not have had the connotation that it has now. Now, I had another email from someone who said, "Hey, Carol, I was thinking about your interview with Kenneth Adams. I read his books on mother-son enmeshment and relationships. He said I would be very pleased if you could get him on the air to talk about enmeshment and male sex addicts and mother-son enmeshment." Boy, I was ecstatic when Dr. Ken Adams, one of my professors and a man that I really appreciate, he came to me and said, "Hey, I'd like to talk about my mother-son enmeshment workshop." And so I'm just going to remind you that he has this new intensive workshop for mother enmeshed men. And it is going to be in Clarkston, Michigan. It's scheduled for March 20 through the 23rd. And in that workshop, he's going to be focusing on mother enmeshed men and specifically participants through educational modules will participate in experiential work, artwork, small and large group experiences, and they're going to be able to identify the trappings of enmeshment, understand the impact of enmeshment on their erotic template, cope with underlying anger and guilt, and develop strategies to help them to break free from inappropriate loyalties and to learn to live within healthy commitments. So that's his workshop. If any of you listened to the show last week, and as I look at that, that would have been January 6th. I had Dr. Kenneth Adams on again to talk about that workshop. And unbeknownst to me, I had this request from a listener. Now, I had some more feedback from a listener who said that he hears me talking about the Meadows a lot, and he imagines that the Meadows is top-notch and yet probably affordable for a select few. He said, "I'm curious as how much you tout Patrick Carnes that you rarely mention Pine Grove, a place Dr. Carnes practices for many years until recently. I think there are other sex rehabs that deserve mentioning or interviewing on your program. I am a little troubled by what I hear as a bias. This is my perception. I think, as the only podcast that covers this subject, you might consider a more fair and balanced approach to the subject of rehabs. Just a thought." Hey, I get that. And if you have an opinion, you can feel free to call me at 1-646-595-3284 and weigh in. First of all, I absolutely want to be fair and balanced, although I got kind of a kick out of that. Reminds me of that you think I might be talking Bill O'Reilly language. I do want to be fair and balanced, and I do podcasts for the Meadows. But clearly, I want to mention the ranch, the elements, Sante, Keystone, Capstone, the Refuge. I mean, although there are just so many I can't even mention, and they are all wonderful treatment centers. How do I know that? Because they help to support the Certified Sexual Addictions Program that I'm a part of. And I refer to those places all the time and get referrals from those places. So if it appears that I have a bias, and I do love the Meadows, I have to admit it, I know there are a lot of other fine treatment centers. And if there's one that you have a question about, hey, let me talk with you about it. You feel free to call me. Feel free to email me. I will, okay, I started to say it, I will hook you up with the right people at these treatment centers so that you can talk to an intake worker, find out what kind of educational services they provide, and take it from there. Now, I had a listener say to me, hey, I liked your interview with Dr. Shelley Urem. Okay, she practices at the Meadows, but I'm not mentioning them. I've listened to that podcast several times, and I've even attempted to transcribe it. I've identified myself as a love addict. And, you know, I can really appreciate that because some sex addicts are love addicts and not sex addicts. Some sex addicts are sex addicts and love addicts. Some love addicts have sex addict qualities and might be sex addicts, but truly, if their primary issues fall under the criteria of love addiction, that's a little bit of a different diagnosis, and they need to be treated differently. Although you probably know that there are love addiction groups all over the country, and you can find that out by going to www.loveaddiction.org, and you can find out what meetings might be in your city where you can go to and A, get their big book so that it talks about what is love addiction as well as what are the 12 steps as well as the individual stories about that. And B, you can develop the fellowship that you need to make a difference in your own life. You know, love addiction can be terribly, terribly painful because you have that insatiable need to be with somebody regardless of how you're treated. And most love addicts are love pursuants, and they end up, here comes that word again, hooking up. And by hooking up here, I mean they end up being magnetized to love avoidance. And then they do the dance where they never get their needs met because the more they pursue, the more their partner avoids. And Dr. Shelley Urem is in the field as well as she studied directly under Pia Melody. And so, you know, here's this client. He said, I even attempted to transcribe it. So I did something special that I don't do for my listeners. I think I called him a client, but he's really a listener. I sent him a transcript. These transcripts are like 12 pages long. I've got the best transcription list in the world. I know she's listening because she's transcribing this show as we speak. And I went ahead and sent it to him and said, here, it sounds like this is really important to you. He said, I don't like the term love addict. I think if I really knew what love was, I would have not become a sex or love addict. It is definitely a misnomer and a very confusing term. I would like for you to have her back. She spoke about how some children who experienced relational trauma at a very young age, between 18 and 36 months, became emotionally stuck or frozen. So their brain grows and they mature physically, but they are stuck emotionally at age 3. I believe I'm stuck there. This is a very unpleasant realization. Now, he says, Dr. Urim stated that this is very hard to work through and recover from. I'm aware of my wounded, emotionally stuck little boy looking for that rescuer or mother figure that I did not have as a child. That is not a healthy adult male relational need. Yet I don't know how to soothe that inner child and heal him from that wound. I don't want him to be driving my relational decisions unconsciously. It would be interesting to hear Dr. Urim describe the process one goes through to heal this wound. Well, the good news is we plan on having Dr. Shelley Urim from the Meadows back this year. And if you want more information about love addiction, probably the queen of love addiction, the person that has written more about it and studied more about it, is Pia Melody, and she has a great book called Facing Love Addiction. I'm sure you probably already got it, but there might be some listeners out there who have either never heard of her or never heard of the term and want to know more about it. So as you can see, I've got some great emails, and I want to end with another email from a 54-year-old sex addict. He says, I struggle with consistent recovery dailies and commitment to recovery work. I don't have a recovery program of due diligence. I'm not consistent, and I'm overwhelmed with what I'm discovering about myself. Sex addiction is but a symptom of several deeper issues. Oh, boy. This is a man who really understands that this is not just a coin phrase that we just tag on people, that if you have a sex addiction, or a love addiction for that matter, you more than likely have had emotional trauma as a child. Not always, especially if you're a pornography viewer, but if you are into exhibitionism or voyeurism, if you have constant affairs, if you don't feel like you can have an open and honest relationship with a person, you have deeper issues. And these unresolved childhood traumas and grief can really affect your functioning. He says, I have a limited ability to feel for myself and others. And boy, I get that, because I talk to men all day long, and feeling identification is very, very difficult. Now, if you've listened to my show, you know that people suffer from 5 to 7 primary feelings, and they are anger, sadness, loneliness, fear, happiness, shame, and guilt. And it's so important for an addict who has suppressed these feelings, who has denied them, who has minimized or rationalized them away, to begin to learn how to be authentic by A, identifying the feelings, and B, deciding what is a healthy way to work on them. And when you do that, you begin to learn the ABCs of how to recover and manage your sexual addiction. He says, you know, my inability to feel for myself and others has blocked access to adult roles, thinking, and behaviors because I'm stuck in unfinished business, not able to organize either thought or day while carrying around this throbbing emotional and psychological wound and avoidance of maturational tasks through the years of my addiction. such as committing myself to some life's work, taking steps to make it real. Sex addiction has effectively allowed me to postpone necessary formative growth because it kept me sedated rather than grappling and struggling with the issues that encourage maturation. So now I'm 54 and at times seized with anxiety over this realization. I feel like a 10-year-old trying to figure out life and to get life together in a productive manner. I'm wearied and I'm so tired. Well, if you think about it, he sounds very discouraged. And at the same time, if I said there were these seven feelings, anger, sadness, loneliness, happiness, fear, shame, and guilt, what do you think he feels when he says, I feel like a 10-year-old trying to figure out life and get life together in a productive manner. I'm wearied and I'm so tired. More than likely, he feels sad. Sad that his life has been such a struggle. And again, we get that because clearly life can be a struggle when you haven't really been able to work through the issues that so oftentimes make it difficult to have healthy relationships and make life different. And I get that, absolutely get that. But you know what? He called it exactly like he saw it when he said, I don't have a strong recovery program. I haven't used due diligence. And due diligence is so important when it comes to a recovery program. You should be doing probably 10 things a day to work on your recovery. You know, one of them would be going to 12-step meetings, having a sponsor and meeting with him or her regularly, prayer, meditation, reading 12-step materials, going to a certified sexual addictions therapist, exercising, having a journal, identifying your feelings, and then doing all the other normal things, such as getting filters on your phone, on your, getting filters on, you know, every laptop you own. I know that it can be very, very difficult to take away that opportunity to act out. But that is the way that you get healthy, when you absolutely take that opportunity away so that you can clearly and understandably be less tempted. You know, if you've got this wounded soul condition, you have to protect yourself. You've got to parent yourself and keep yourself safe. Now, I wrote an article called The Wounded Soul Condition. It was before I even got into sexual addiction. You can find it on my blog, www.carolthecoach.com. Go to my podcasts, my blogs, and look up The Wounded Soul Condition. In that, I say that most people are resilient and they're able to weather emotional pain and grow stronger from it. That is resiliency. That is reframing. However, when people experience trauma and find that they have to work harder to work through the issues, they can either become angry and frustrated they have to work so hard, or they can gain lifelong coping skills. When you were a child, if you experienced divorce, abandonment, rejection, severe criticism, or abuse, it may have felt like you could not recuperate from that pain. And it might have felt like you couldn't overcome it. You couldn't recover. If you stay stuck in that victimhood, it would appear that you have what I call a wounded soul. This is an extreme condition that causes a developmental arrest in a person's psyche. And what else causes a developmental arrest? Addiction. So when a person's soul is wounded, he's kept locked in a holding pattern, he or she actually. And if a person cannot overcome his trials and tribulations, he suffers debilitating effects. Although he may look successful, because maybe he's a workaholic, and that's how he medicates his pain, he is hiding a dark secret inside. Not only does he feel inadequate, he is unable to maintain healthy relationships because of his past wounding. And again, I use the pronoun he, but this can be for women, any age, men any age, teenagers, children. Now, people who have had this condition are unable to fully give or receive from another human being. What do we call that? We say they're unable to have intimacy. It prevents them from having intimate relationships, and they report that there is a hole inside of them that is insatiable. They may derive pleasure from certain activities or hobbies, or they may self-medicate with drugs, alcohol, sex, eating, gambling, money, you know, all those short-term hits that affect your reward center in the brain. However, these people can't recall positive childhood memories. People who've experienced a wounded soul describe feeling that they don't measure up, even when they have great achievements. So, more often times than not, they either are over-successful, they strive for perfection, they are overly ambitious, and they spend every second keeping themselves busy so they don't have to feel, or they lack ambition, and they don't seem to make a difference in their own lives. As you might imagine, people who have experienced early childhood trauma have learned that life is too painful, so they've withdrawn from the relationships to avoid being hurt. Wow. They've withdrawn from relationships, and let's face it, relationships are the essence of life. This may insulate and protect them from further injury, but it also keeps them from feeling. They've given up emotionally, or they've guarded themselves so drastically that they won't allow people into their lives. They are unable to achieve intimacy because they've turned off the switch to human emotion long ago. Their ability to disassociate becomes so natural that they become performers or actors, not allowing feelings to work into the equation. They may not have a conscious awareness that they have given up on others, let alone themselves. Well, I say that, but to be real honest, if they got quiet and they spent some time just being, they would feel that nagging feeling that says, they're not happy inside. They don't feel good about themselves. And their life is not complete. Sometimes people with the wounded soul condition become overly critical to keep others from getting too close. Not only are they at risk for anything that numbs them, they may spend their entire life self-medicating the pain. This is why sex addicts oftentimes have wounded souls. They've had this trauma that has hurt so much, they've learned to turn off the feelings. And as one of my clients described this evening, he disassociated and really did feel himself leaving his body, watching himself in rageful situations as a child. Now, can you imagine what he's done? He's married a woman who's a rager. And he and I both know that this is actually a good thing because it will help him to get healthy. He will now learn the coping skills necessary to not take her rage personally and to develop critical boundaries that will help to keep him safe. Oh, I know you may be saying, well, big deal. So he has this, situation where he's been wounded, he's got good coping skills, but he still has a horrible environment from which to live. And absolutely, yes, he does. But you know what? When somebody learns to identify their feelings and they create healthier boundaries and they begin to feel and they stand up for themselves because they can as an adult, they couldn't as a kid, well, then they are able to feel better about themselves. And when they feel better about themselves and they get stronger, well, I'm here to tell you, when that occurs, they become more authentic and genuine and good things happen. Maybe their wife or their husband doesn't change, but maybe they start finding healthy relationships with their children. You know, that gets healthier. Or extended family. Or the fellowship that used to promote abstinence. That fellowship becomes a family of choice. And they create this whole new experience where they have people supporting them as opposed to attacking them or raging at them. That's if they create the support they need to fight this horrible wounded soul condition. Instead of seeking external means to feel good, because let's face it, when you seek external means to feel good, you find that nothing fills the hole that the childhood trauma has created. That's the bad news. But the good news is when you develop healthy relationships, it's validating. And when you create supportive people in your life, that hole gets smaller and smaller because you couldn't create those supportive people if you weren't working on yourself. So as you're listening to what I describe as a definition for the wounded soul, I want you to think about either yourself or your partner that meets these criteria and know that there's nothing that you can say or do that will compensate for the previous pain. But finding healthier people to draw from emotionally as your loved one has very little to give you emotionally is absolutely the way to go for partners who have a loved one with the wounded soul. And if you personally think that you suffer from this condition, you need to run, not walk, to the nearest counseling agency and be ready to do some intensive psychotherapy. And you know I'm a big believer, if you're a drug addict, get to an addiction specialist. If you're an alcoholic, find somebody who's got expertise in alcoholism. If you're a sex addict, go to a certified sexual addictions therapist. You know, your prognosis may be guarded, but you can overcome your past if you're ready to do the work and feel the pain, move beyond it, and trust again. Okay? So that's what you would need to do. You need to do the work, feel the feelings, or as I indicated, the pain, create some healthier coping skills that will move you beyond it, and of course, develop relationships or trust again. You did the best you could with what life dealt you, and now as an adult, it's up to you to change your course and find the joy in human connection. I mean, wouldn't that be horrible if you cheated yourself forever? You mastered the art of disconnecting to avoid being repeatedly hurt. That was a coping mechanism. You did that to protect yourself, and it served you well as a child. But now it requires that you find the right tools to take life to the next level. Intimacy is a part of that human connection. So is feelings, and so is fellowship. Now, if you want a copy of the Wounded Soul Connection, you can email me at carolthecoach@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send that to you so that you can kind of go over the criteria and decide if this is something that fits you or your loved one. And if you have questions about it, you can always email me at 646-595-3284. Email me at carolthecoach@aol.com. I'd be happy to talk to you. Or you can go to my blog and read it there. You know, I aim to serve. Now, you may say to yourself, what do you mean you aim to serve? Well, the 12th step of the 12-step program is service. And I am a believer in picking a word every year that I can incorporate into my regular routine. Sometimes that word has been fitness or inspiration or moderation or balance. All good words to help me put things in perspective. You know, I really believe in the pick a word theory for goal setting at the new year. And what I know to be true is that this year my word is serve or service. I'm at the age now, I'm 58, I'm at the age now where gosh, I've achieved what I've wanted to achieve. Oh, there's always more, definitely. I'd like this show to become syndicated. I'd like for somebody to pick me up so I could speak to you in your car, in your home. You know, I've had radio shows before. I've had four. Loved them to death. Internet radio is absolutely wonderful, but I'd like to do it all. But in the meantime, what I believe is that God is using me in all sorts of ways to make a difference in the life of others. And my serving really allows me to receive back tenfold. I mean, isn't that what the Bible promises? Tenfold in a way that, you know, when I'm helping you, I feel 10 times happier helping you than you feel receiving my help. And that's one of the reasons that I went into the field of sexual addiction, because it is a condition, a disorder that can be very shameful. So that's a little bit about the wounded soul. That's a little bit about love addiction. Again, I highly recommend Kenneth Adams' Mother Enmeshment Workshop. It's going to be March 20th through 23rd. You can go to, let me see here if I can find, yeah, Dr. Ken Adams and Associates at gmail.com for more information. And I got to tell you, I'm really excited. Next week, we have a woman on the show, on actually, Dr. Martin Luther King Day is next Monday. And I am really pleased because I am going to be interviewing Elena Clark Fahler. She is a CSAT supervisor. She's an LCSW, that's a licensed clinical social worker. And she's a sex addiction therapist and sex therapist and clinical director of Recovery Help Now. It's a group therapy private practice in Los Angeles, California. And one of the things that she found is that African-American women are especially prone to sex and love addiction, and they have several things in common. And she's going to be talking about what those things are, as well as what can you do in treatment to help African-American women. Is that population different than Caucasian women, Asian women? How about men? You know, what are the differences between women's behavior and male sex addicts? Is there a difference? And she really has made it her mission to talk about why are African-American women prone to these two disorders? Well, we've got her on the show next Monday. And so I'm really, really pleased that we are going to be working with her. And then on the 27th, we have Claudia Black, who's going to be talking about addiction in general and sex addiction. And we just got a whole range of experts in the field coming up who are going to be talking about three-day intensive disclosure processes. You know, when you have committed a variety of betrayals against your partner, what can you do to rebuild the trust? How does that work? And, you know, yes, it takes some rigorous honesty. On February 10th, we're going to be talking with Alexis Polis, who's going to be talking about her program. And we've got Deborah Whalen, who's going to be talking about love and sex addiction on February 3rd. So I am so looking forward to the opportunity to interview these experts in the field to help you. And you know, when it helps you, it helps me too. I always say this is my hour for constant education from the trendsetters in the field. That's why I was so pleased when I got those emails wanting to hear Dr. Urim as well as Dr. Ken Adams. I mean, we've had some fabulous people. And I know that it can be very, very tough to call in the show at 646-595-3284. But if that's the case, you can always email me because I'm more than happy to take your email questions and hopefully take your life to the next level. You deserve it. You've been through a lot. And that's why I really believe that listening to this show is the start of making a huge difference in your life. You know, there's no other show like it. And if you want to know about treatment centers or people in the field or the best books, then truly you need to stay tuned to the show. So I'll be back with you after the break for a few final thoughts.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people. Every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
Yes. Do you want to change? That's the question. You know, change oftentimes takes a lot of contemplation. You have to really think and think and think about what is it you want to change and why. And then sometimes a crisis occurs, something that's absolutely devastating that feels like the worst thing in the world, and yet it motivates you into change. And I mean, that is actually a good thing. Crises is a good thing. That is when people are most likely to change. That is when people are most likely to grow. However, that can feel 100% debilitating and scary and like you can't recover. And yet I've never met anybody who didn't recover, whether they were arrested at the job for pornography in the schools, or they were sitting at home with their family when the police stopped them, well, didn't stop them, but came to their home and they had to explain to their young children that daddy was being arrested for doing bad things, or women who have been caught having sex in their home by their husbands or their children or their loved ones. You know, these things feel like they're insurmountable and that one cannot recover. But my promise to you is that absolutely you can recover. But you clearly and indubitably have to have a recovery plan. You can't just feel the feelings, want to change, and expect yourself to change. You know, one of the biggest fallouts from people that I work with is that they think that they are strong enough to handle the changes. They feel like it is through sheer willpower and determination that they can change their life. And with addiction, it doesn't happen that way. And if it does indeed happen, they are not in true recovery because they're not utilizing the tools to get them healthy. If you don't have somebody that you can talk to, if you don't have fellowship, if you don't have the right reading materials, you may stop the behavior, but you are doing what we call white knuckling it. You're holding on for dear life, and you won't learn the healthy skills necessary to make your life different. I've been criticized on this show for being too 12-step oriented, but I truly believe it's a fellowship that makes a huge difference, just like Recovery Nation does and Smart Recovery. All these are programs that help the addict, and they all can be helpful, but they are a program. It does involve people. It does involve reading. It does involve study. And that's what counts. So think about your life and how you would like it to be different. Whether you be an addict or a partner, you too can make a huge difference in your life if you pay attention to the kinds of tools that are available to you. And it's not just one tool. It should be a whole host of tools. That's what really makes the difference. And so I get that you may have changed your life for the better, but if you don't do that on a daily basis with lots of support from others, it will only be a matter of time before you go back. Because, you know, wanting strategies to assist yourself in getting healthy is one thing. But there's no reason for you to reinvent the wheel. You need to find out what works, and then you need to work it. And that allows you to be more effective. And that's what makes a difference in your life. It isn't going to be your husband or wife that gets you to change. It's going to be the resources that you create to make your life different. Okay, well, that's the end of the show. So I'll see you next week. And I look forward to spending Martin Luther King with you. It's that special day where we really honor a man who believed in equality for everybody. And any therapist that works with addicts has that same belief. You are as valuable as anybody else, but you must value yourself first and foremost by developing a support network. And as I end the show, I do it as I always do. There will only be one of you at all times, so I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself, to develop the resources and the support that you need to change your life. Change your thinking, change your life. Okay, we'll see you next week. And again, I thank you for your emails, your contributions, and your patience. We'll talk to you later.